on this episode of The Kinked Wire.
You see that it's appalling. What can you do, and what can we do as privileged human beings to denounce this, to say that it's wrong, to not stand for it, to say that, you know what, that's not right, and this is what I'm going to do about it.
Welcome to The Kinked Wire, the Interventional Radiology podcast from SIR's IR Quarterly magazine. You can learn more at our website, sirweb.org/kinkedwire. And this episode is brought to you by Sirtex. Learn more at sirtexvirtualbooth.com. In this episode, Kinked Wire host Warren Krakow speaks with interventional radiologist PJ Rashan about diversity and inclusion, implicit bias, and the importance of taking a stand against racism.
Thanks so much for being here. Certainly really appreciate it. Obviously, we've got a ton of things we could cover with you. And one of the things I'd really like to delve into, though, is something that I think is really long overdue for this podcast. I think for really, in some ways, the SIR and really for, you know, all of medicine and healthcare in general. And that's, you know, diversity and inclusion. And I know you've got a forthcoming article in IR Quarterly. You know, I had the chance to review it and I thought it was great. It's just such a huge issue. I think that and COVID are really the seminal issues now. And as you point out, they are not unrelated. So I'd like to start there, actually. And, you know, in terms of implicit bias, I know you talk about it in the article, but I'd like to get your take on it and what exactly you mean by it and its implications.
Whenever we have a discussion about diversity, equity, and inclusion, it has to come to the forefront in terms of any type of workshop or education module that we are undergoing. Implicit bias is what we know as unconscious bias or implicit social cognition. It's our formed stereotypes and attitudes that affect our behavior in our everyday lives, personal lives, work lives, those that are intertwined as well. But these are things initially that we are unaware of and likely due to the environment that we come from, the environment that we're currently in. And a lot of us, especially all of us in healthcare, sometimes we are looking at it in a tunnel vision because we're so focused on this disease process, this patient, this answer, well, what are we going to do here? And we need to take a step back and take our blinders off. And what things are we doing that we are unaware of? I have ideas of how we can go about this. But the first thing is our awareness of our implicit bias. All of us have it. None of us are without it.
As you suggest, really, probably all of us operate without knowing it. It seems like it's almost kind of in our subconscious or we're just not aware of it. I happen to be a white physician. And I looked at, as a lot of people did, a lot of the things that happened in terms of police and so on and so forth, and was absolutely flabbergasted at the treatment of the African-American community. And to me, that seemed very obvious and overt. But as I started thinking about it, I thought, you know, I don't ever think of myself as a racist person at all. But then I started thinking, well, I don't know. Are there things that I'm doing or saying? Are there ways that I interrelate with people? Are there things that I do that are, again, unintentionally, but nevertheless, leading to somebody feeling, you know, a racist vibe or feeling? The last thing I know I would ever want to do was make anyone feel that way. But when you mention education and inwardly looking, it sounds like that's what you're saying, that you've got to tease that out and figure out what it is that framed you or is going on inside you so that you can learn to act in a fully equitable way.
You're absolutely right. A lot of majority white males, white females are not racist. I mean, there's a very small percentage of people who are racist, but it's just overt and it's still out there. But when we look at it now, I mean, things are still happening. There's hatred and injustice that, as you said, you are appalled by. It's like, how can this be happening? But what is the next step? You see that it's appalling. What can you do and what can we do as privileged human beings to denounce this, to say that it's wrong? To not stand for it, to say that, you know what, that's not right, and this is what I'm going to do about it. A lot of us in this privileged state feel that, okay, well, that's wrong, but I'm going to go about my own daily life because I'm comfortable. It's not really affecting me. My kids are fine. They may ask some questions, but they are provided for. They have all the resources they need. That's where it's coming from. And the people who it's affecting personally, that's the cry out that I believe is happening. And that's what we need. It's not about, are you racist or not? And that's something that we all need to look into, that implicit bias. But it goes a little bit deeper than that. Why are we still seeing these acts of hatred, injustices, health disparities, these pandemics that are uncovering things that we have been dealing with for hundreds of years? It's just in a different scenario.
Getting into your article a little, the data are very clear that in the COVID era, the African-American population has been absolutely decimated by COVID as compared to other populations. And the African-American community seems constantly to be victimized, whether it's violence, which could be argued is itself a public health crisis. It's poor access to preventive medicine and preventive health care, ultimately leading to higher incidence of diabetes, hypertension, end-stage renal disease, cancer, that COVID is really another example of that. And I was really taken by your example of what happened in the ICU with CT scans of the chest with patients, both pre and post-COVID. And if you don't mind walking our listeners through that a little bit.
Sure thing. We are interventional radiologists, but a lot of us are under the umbrella of diagnostic radiology, and we still practice that. And we think about, well, how can we as diagnostic radiologists also make an impact? And this was coming from one of my colleagues in internal medicine, and just one account of why are we limiting CT scans, which we said that we were going to do during COVID because, well, we know what clinically is happening. It's not going to change anything. We're trying to decrease the workflow and exposure to COVID with patients coming down for CT scans. A lot of departments have been doing this. And rightfully so, because it was a pandemic, we want to try and get it under control. But as you said, the data has that Black people, African Americans, were affected more so than white Americans and the majority. In the ICU, we have that data. And now that it's turned and the majority are Black patients, and they may have other things going on. We talk about how COVID is related to a hypercoagulable state, i.e. PE, venous thromboembolism. Well, we still need to know these things. In the past, we said, well, this patient has shortness of breath, has these signals for clotting. Let's get a CTPE. It's going to change our management. Well, now we're saying this patient is COVID positive, and they're a Black patient too, but they're just COVID, COVID positive. That's how we're labeling these patients. They have shortness of breath. The ordering team is concerned about that. But now they may have some resistance of getting a CT scan. So now it goes back to seeing how populations are being affected, where these health disparities are, and how can we change our global systemic protocols to not treat it as such. Yes, we need our protocols to protect our workers, the pandemic and things like that, but inherently, what are we really doing for each individual patient? And that's where it's not just an intervention radiology thing. It's not just a diagnostic radiology thing. It's healthcare. It's medicine. It's how we should be communicating all across the board about these issues of health disparities.
So it's all the health disparities along the way that led to that patient being more likely to have deleterious consequences from COVID than, say, a white patient of privilege.
And we have that data right now. We're still within this pandemic. And this is going to go away. We know that. It just will have to take our time to do that. But what's our next step? We have more Black patients who are affected. And people may say because of the other comorbidities, such as diabetes, hypertension. But that goes down the road, too, on, well, why these patients have diabetes, hypertension, why are they uncontrolled? Why can't we get them under control? And now they know that more COVID positive patients are Black. So what's happening to the Black population? Just as we saw 50 years ago, 100 years ago, it's going to be a distrust in healthcare. We're not going to be able to get our Black patients for follow-up. We're not going to be able to get them to the treatment that they need because, one, I don't want to go to the hospital because, hey, COVID is around. I'm at higher risk of contracting COVID, and I'm at higher risk of getting to the ICU and dying. What type of effect is that going to have down the road for these vulnerable groups to have a distrust in our healthcare system? And that's that vicious cycle that we see every single pandemic, every year that we're trying to fight for. But when this is done, we cannot forget the things that we're talking about right now. This has to perpetuate through day in and day out, yearly initiatives and endeavors that we need to combat this.
You know, getting into bias and, you know, maybe even overt racism in terms of interventional radiology itself, you know, I think it's probably fair to say that although many of us now certainly would never consider ourselves racist, I think traditionally interventional radiology has probably not been thought of as the most diverse or inclusive specialty. What do you think about why that may be or how we're doing as a specialty now?
We've come a long way, and I'm so proud of my colleagues who have come before me, who have started this diversity and inclusion effort. I'm just a small piece of this pie, sharing their knowledge and learning more and more each and every day. But the society has done great things across the board for developing a diversity and inclusion advisory council, having multiple groups come together, having it more perpetuated throughout our society as well as our annual meeting, having different groups now being represented, such as our new underrepresented minority section. We have a women in IR section that has flourished and learning a lot and really working together with women in IR and all of the groups that have had discrimination and could actually increase the diversity of our specialty. Now, why have we not been diverse and as inclusive as we are right now? I think in the past, we just were not intentional in our efforts of wanting or seeking a more diverse residency class, more diverse faculty, you name it. We have to go out and get it. We have to go out and show others, show those underrepresented minorities, women, and all of these groups why IR can be their specialty. What things that we are doing intentionally to improve our diversity and inclusion. But we have to be intentional about it. We have to show them. We just can't check a box and say, okay, we believe this. What efforts are we trying to do? What curriculum, workshops that we're having our own faculty go through? What changes are we doing in our interview process to develop a more diverse class? What safe spaces do we have to listen to others and make those changes and not rest on the culture that we already have and changing that as we move forward? And listening to people at different tiers, not only the leadership, they need the training as well, but also students, residents, administrative staff, everyone plays a role in making it a more diverse and inclusive specialty. We have all of the tools in interventional radiology. Specifically, we have the diagnostic radiology expertise. We can see patients. We have the ability to have a clinic and do it all. And I believe that that's what most people, maybe this is my bias, in my opinion, underrepresented minorities are coming in because we want to help people. Everyone wants to help people. We come from a background where there's an incident that we want to make a change. We want maybe to go back to our communities and make that change. Well, we need the resources to do that. But in IR, we can do that. Plus, we're leaders in innovation. We treat every single disease. And now going to the health disparities, every single disease is affected by that. So there are a lot of options for a more diverse and inclusive population, people, human beings, to be involved in our specialty. There's no secret of why we have been the number one specialty since we've been deemed a specialty and not a subspecialty. That is something that we need to keep pushing forward. And as I said before, SIR has identified this. People who I work with closely, who have come before me, who have initiated this, they saw it. And now is a ripe opportunity to make this happen.
I think that's a phenomenal call to action and really great words. And I particularly like the concept of really bringing this to the trainee level, medical students, but you know, particularly our residents, that should be part of the curriculum. And a lot of things that we're talking about, stuff you've talked about in your article in terms of racial demographics and inclusion, that should be part of the curriculum. Why isn't that patient getting the CT scan? What are the implications for that? And so on. I think that's how we sort of move the needle forward. Your article, you had mentioned something about the minority tax, that sort of burden of extra responsibilities in the name of diversity. What did you mean by that?
A lot of diversity and inclusiveness endeavors, ideas, initiatives are maybe brought about by those who are underrepresented, those who have taken a different pathway or have maybe, not maybe, but did go through obstacles to get where they are, may not have had the resources most people have had to get where they are, and identify those burdens and those things that are actually affecting them. And they want to be in this leadership role, and they want to lead these efforts to do that. But when they're called upon to do this, they also have to bear other things that the majority and everyone has to do, such as other things for promotion, research, a clinical team. They also have to educate. And all of a sudden, that takes time. And to do it well, you have to incorporate the time. But now we're throwing in diversity and inclusion, which brings upon even more. But it's a passion that all of us have, and maybe the minority who's actually leading this has as well, but she or he has to carry all of this along with diversity and inclusion. And the workshops that are being developed, curricula that's being developed, bringing in different people, all of these virtual calls that we're doing these days because of this pandemic, that takes time. And not to mention, as human beings, we have other lives. We haven't even talked about the wellness. We have our home lives. We need to actually be able to operate and function at a high capacity. We are working under stress 24/7. So going back to the minority tax, it's an extra layer that's being asked of people who want to lead, and it's typically going to be a minority. I would love it to be other people helping and engaging, forming committees so that this minority tax can be lessened, giving the person who is leading this endeavor the time necessary, the same time that certain departments and certain practices give presidents, give vice chairs, give chiefs, give program directors, well, give the leader, or I would even go as far as say the vice chair of diversity and inclusion in that group, give her or him the time and maybe the resources, finances necessary to make this happen. This should not be placed on the back burner, but that's usually what it is, because we all have to get other things done, get that paper written, get this protocol done. Our patients will come first. But now when we're putting into this diversity and inclusiveness, which multiple institutions are now pushing, and not just to check a box, to be intentional about it and be authentic so that medical students who are coming in, other faculty, other partners who are trying to recruit, they see that we mean something and we're putting our money where our mouth is, because this takes a lot of effort and time for this actually to happen. And that goes into what the minority tax is.
As we unfortunately have to wind down now, I want to just say that I'd like to have you back. I really appreciate you educating me, educating the other interventional radiologists listening, and you know, to keep pushing on this. As I close that off, I'm going to ask you probably the hardest question that I ask all of our guests, which is, if there is one thing that you could change in healthcare, what would it be?
Wonderful question. And I would say healthcare for all, and that's equity. There's a lot of political backing to this, but it starts with us as human beings. And we who are in healthcare have a privilege, whether we are of color, member of the majority. We all need to fight for it because we live it. And going back to your initial question, we need to be aware of our implicit biases. We need to be okay to speak up for what's right and not turn the cheek. So if I could change anything in healthcare, it would be equity in healthcare.
Would really fix a lot of things. So let's hope that a lot of people can get together and do it. I, again, really want to thank you for, just on a personal level, educating me and I think educating a lot of folks listening. I wish you all the best, and thanks again for being here.
Thank you so much.
That was Dr. PJ Rashan talking about the urgent need to address healthcare disparities and to join together against racism. You can read his related article at sirweb.org/IRQ. We thank Dr. Rashan for his time, Surtex for supporting this episode, and you for listening to The King's Wire. Our host is Dr. Warren Krakoff. Our editor is Dr. Jamin Shaw. Our production manager is Dr. Jason Fisher. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you have any thoughts or ideas for us, drop us a line at irq@serweb.org.